Earth and Sky.
Well, geothermal energy is certainly alive and well, and it's not going to take enormous new discoveries of new science or technology to make it work.
You are listening to chemical engineer Jefferson Tester of Cornell University, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Tester is talking about geothermal energy, a way to generate electricity from heat stored deep in the earth. He's led scientific assessments on geothermal for the U.S. Department of Energy, the National Academy of Sciences, and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Dr. Tester spoke more about the state and science of geothermal energy with EarthSky's Jorge Salazar.
Dr. Tester, welcome to EarthSky's Clear Voices for Science.
Great to be here.
Tell us about geothermal energy. What's the state of geothermal energy today?
Well, geothermal energy is certainly alive and well and being used around the world in three different ways: to generate electricity, to provide heating for buildings, and using natural sources of steam and hot water coming from below the ground at, say, 1 to 3 kilometers, typically, in so-called hydrothermal reservoirs, and even in widespread use as a heat source in shallow geothermal environments for geothermal heat pumps, using subsurface temperatures at very, very shallow depths. Right now, there are about 11,000 megawatts of electricity being produced from geothermal and about 15,000 megawatts for thermal use online as capacity around the world. In addition, there are about 1.5 or so million geothermal heat pump systems operating in more than 30 countries, which corresponds to an additional 15, 16,000 megawatts of thermal use. An interesting characteristic of geothermal is that it's used not only in developed countries like the United States, Italy and New Zealand and Iceland, but also in developing countries such as Indonesia, Kenya, the Philippines, and many others in Central America.
Put these numbers in perspective a little bit and tell us about the potential for geothermal energy as an energy resource in the United States.
It's interesting that the United States is actually the leading producer of geothermal-produced electricity or based electricity around the world with about 3,500 megawatts of capacity. And there are many new power plants and geothermal heat pump systems under construction right now. Nevertheless, though, we've only utilized a tiny fraction of what might be available, and this is clearly a growth potential for the country. We have just a few district heating systems operating in the U.S. right now that use geothermal energy. The direct use and electric generation potential is large, even from just so-called existing natural systems, so-called hydrothermal systems, if you will. But if we go beyond that and just try to imagine utilizing the stored thermal energy that's underneath the crust of the Earth, underneath the United States, to accessible depths, then we have an essentially unlimited potential. There are several things that have to happen to make it work beyond the so-called natural systems that exist in relatively isolated spots. And this involves what's often referred to as enhanced geothermal system technology, or EGS. And the EGS approach would use engineering to take a hot dry rock or a hot reservoir and to put it in a form to help stimulate it to a form that would emulate the characteristics of today's commercial hydrothermal systems. So the potential's large, and we're far from being even close to using what we could.
Now, I'd like to come back to this enhanced geothermal, but just for the benefit of people listening, maybe you could describe to us just the basics of geothermal.
Okay, well, there's basically three things that are needed to make a geothermal system work. You need sufficiently hot rock close enough to the surface for whatever your end use, intended end use is. You need to have reasonable permeability or porosity of the rock itself, and a sufficient quantity of water or steam, either naturally contained or water that you would put underground, to provide a means for what I would refer to as mining the heat from the subsurface. In so-called high-grade hydrothermal systems, such as we have at this geysers field in Northern California or in Iceland or New Zealand, that nature has really done all the work. It's provided all three of these ingredients in a high-grade form. In other areas, around the United States or other parts of the world, one or more of these ingredients is missing. Here is where EGS comes into play. Defined generally as we're calling them enhanced geothermal systems, they're engineered to emulate the characteristics of these natural systems. Usually this means that we invoke some sort of hydraulic stimulation where we pressurize the rock system to cause it to have a higher permeability and to create connections between a set of injection wells, which are drilled into this hot rock formation, and production wells at depths where the temperatures would be in the range, if we're making electricity, let's say from about 100 to 300 degrees centigrade, depending on, again, the proposed application. What's usually involved in a scientific sense is we're creating this permeable connection by opening up old sealed fractures that have been, these are microfractures or small fractures that are being reopening against the confining earth stress. These fractures when they're open, they have rough surfaces and they tend to move slightly relative to each other, the faces of the fractures, and they remain open after that pressure is removed. This so-called shear displacement, as it's referred to, allows us to have an open reservoir that could circulate fluids for a long period of time. So that's the essence of it. Either you take what nature gives you or you try to engineer what it has given you in the form of a hot rock system and stimulate it in a way where you're emulating these hydrothermal conditions.
I understand that you're also involved with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the upcoming report that is looking at how to mitigate CO2 emissions through these new technologies, through the increased use of geothermal.
Let's look at the bigger context. This is a report that's covering the whole area of renewable energy. So as you look around the world, each region has its own set of resource attributes. Some parts of the world have extremely high quality solar energy. Other parts might be endowed more with good wind resources or biomass resources. Geothermal has this feature that it could complement the use and deployment of these other renewables as well, because its baseload, it does not have to rely on a storage system. It's not it doesn't have this interruptible characteristic that some of the other renewables have. And it also could be deployed directly for heating needs as well as even cooling needs. That has a feature which I think would allow renewables to scale at a much larger rate than perhaps had been envisioned if we were to just use one or two of these renewable resources. So we're hoping that in this report, as it comes out, that all of the characteristics of renewables will be treated in a sort of balanced fashion, where you could advise a country or a given locale on what might their options be. Because often, as you've mentioned to begin with, that geothermal is forgotten in this discussion. Frequently, you'll hear renewables talked about and geothermal won't even be mentioned. And I think that's probably a shortcoming of the nature of most of the development in the world has been associated with these natural systems, which do occur in a few locations. If we were to scale this differently with EGS and to start to think about much more direct use at lower temperatures, geothermal, I believe, could have a much bigger impact on helping us solve this problem.
With every energy resource, there's always a downside to that. Is there an environmental downside to geothermal?
Well, there's certainly, I think, again, there are several things you need to think about. Every system has its own individual characteristics, but you can't escape the idea that you have to use a lot of water. One way or the other, you're going to be using water in the subsurface system. Either it's going to be provided naturally and you're going to have to recirculate it and re-inject it to keep the system recharged, or you might have to require water for stimulation where it isn't there naturally. If you're using cooling water for the electricity generation, then that could be a consideration. So the water use and consumption has to be properly managed and dealt with. In arid regions of the country, it's obviously a more severe issue than it might be in regions where we have plenty of water that we're using for cooling water right now. The question of induced seismicity, during production and stimulation is something that, again, has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. We know a lot about the behavior of geothermal systems, as I'll get to in a moment. Emissions, if we are dealing with open-loop production, which would not be probably the practice that would be followed in new development, but it has been in the past, emissions control and control of certain natural pollutants that might be in a natural geothermal fluid can be done, but it's an issue. And in areas where we're just not used to drilling, that the land use impacts associated with bringing drill rigs in, drilling, preparing a well field, and power plant construction certainly come along with this as real impacts. They aren't done forever, but they are real and would have to be a piece of what you'd accept. But I think that, you know, these need to be placed, you know, sort of in the proper perspective, because you have some good news that comes out of this. We have a long history of operating geothermal power plants in the world. We have over 100 years of experience in the Tuscany Hills alone in northern Italy, and as these extensive developments in California and Iceland, New Zealand, Indonesia, and the Philippines that have been operating safely for decades. So the induced seismicity question, I think, has to be taken in that context as well as water use and land use and all the other issues that go with it. But the trade-offs, and I think this is the part that's often missed in making alternative energy decisions or seeking out energy options, is that we've got to weigh the positive attributes, namely the ability to supply baseload electricity with minimal emissions, particularly in closed-loop cycles, relatively small footprints, particularly on the surface of a power plant, so multiple land use effects could occur with a geothermal development, against the potential risks and other impacts.
You've been listening to Jefferson Tester. He's the David Kroll Chair of Sustainable Energy Systems and Associate Director for Energy at the Center for a Sustainable Future at Cornell University. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.